everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dadcast. I am your host, JP, and joining me as always, co-host Mr. Nick Martin, the tenacious one. How are
What's
you,
up,
sir?
Guys? I'm good.
Awesome. With us today is an amazing guest. He's done it all, man. TV shows, comedian, movies, politic craziness. He's disrupted the world. He's gotten in Twitter beefs. You name it. It is the man, the myth, the legend. You know him as Mr. Tom Arnold. How are you, sir?
It's great. It's great to see you guys. You look like guys that could either be my sons or my best friends or my worst enemies.
Oh,
but well, I'm hoping for best friends. It's great.
Yeah, let's go with the latter two, man. I mean, we'll decide how after this hour goes if we're enemies or not. But I don't think we're going to go that direction.
So, Tom, the
premise of this podcast, which we're very proud of, it's very unique. We discuss all things dad, or at least we try to put some emphasis on, you know, the incredible job and important job that being a dad is. Now, fair warning, every single episode we've ever done on this podcast has gone off the rails every single time. So we're going to do our best to talk about dads. But of course, we got a lot of time to fill. We'll probably talk a little bit about the life of you as well, and we'll just see how it goes. So first of all, man, how are you and your family holding up during the crazy times that is COVID?
Well, again, I want to thank you guys for doing this podcast because I like it, because I'm a dad, you know, I live for my kids. And I also want to know, get tips from other dads on things. You know, I'm not, well, COVID, my kids have been, I'm 62. I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old and they're here most of the time. And we've been in quarantine. It's been wonderful. In my mind, I was like, this will be the best year ever. This will be life changing. You guys will remember this. You'll remember all the time with dad. You know, I have no idea what they're going to remember or what I would have remembered, but it forced us, you know, to be here together. My son just went back to first grade, in-person first grade last week. And my daughter, who's 5, it would have been here last year of preschool. There's no way that I'm going to do Zoom preschool, but up until then we were doing Zoom class here and just getting my son to focus on the screen that when it's not Minecraft or, you know, or some video game has been a chore. And it's been a chore for the teachers too. You know, I love watching, they put up all the kids in the, on the Zoom and then they start just falling out and they disappear. And so I was worried it was me and I was doing a bad job. But then I could hear some dads and moms saying, get back in there. But it's also given me this great opportunity because he did Zoom school in the morning. And then in the afternoon, I have to go over everything with him. So I'm basically doing first grade again myself. Right. And it's fun to discuss this stuff and see what he got out of what the teacher said. And, you know, there's always homework and going through that. Just hear his explanation of things, of life. And you know, and then at the end, he has to, all his homework, he has to take a video of his hands and him, you know, to set it in, like it's like you're on probation from prison and they want to know where you are at all times, because otherwise, you know, I would just fill a lot of it out. But it's been a great experience. I'm grateful that I'm vaccinated. I'm grateful we're getting on the other end of this. But it's, you know, it may be a little sad to take them to school, but it's a good thing. Your kids should go to school.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They need the interaction with other kids in person for sure.
Yeah.
And
we do have play dates over here and we're very, like last night, I live in a nice neighborhood with nice people, a real, like not a fan, not super fancy, regular neighborhood. It's the first time the kids and I've lived in a place where we didn't have a big gate out front or around the house, so we could see our neighbors. And you know, last time we were playing, the last thing you do each day is play this crazy game of horse that can go on a long time. And I like horse because we had to finish, you know, and it was like 8:30 or it wasn't midnight, although we've done it at midnight. But so, you know, we've learned to, make our house everything. Our house is, you know, the baseball field, the football field, the water balloon field. We have a small yard here, small compared to where I grew up, you know, in Iowa. And then we have the basketball, and then we just make games out of everything. So, and then we had friends over, and it's like a party for these guys, and a lot of outdoor activity. That's how we do it.
Yeah, so that's what we've been missing, man. And, you know, back to the whole Zoom education, we're both going through it as well. And yeah, like yourself, both of my children, I have 16, 10, and 7. And they're all actually back into school full time as of last week. And it's, I ain't going to lie, man, I enjoyed having them home, but it's, we have some of our time back now. And and the work, you know, the whole year that the parents were expected to work and educate their kids and be home for them. And it was a very hard juggle. And I'm glad, like you said, we're getting near the other end. My second shot is due in 4 days. So I'll be vaccinated up. It's crazy. It's, kids should not be behind a computer learning, in my opinion. I mean, I'm glad they got that during the time, but I'm very, very thankful that they are back in. Tom, so you said 8 and 5 year old kids.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you've gotten this question in the past, but I got to know, because I didn't go down too far the Wikipedia hole on Tom Arnold. How is it he got such a late start on being a father?
Well, you know, I always wanted to be a father, and I said I did. And it's a good thing I did. You know, I thought I got a very early start of being a father. When I was 18, I was working at the Hormel meat packing plant on the kill floor. I worked there for 3 years to save money for college. And my 17-year-old girlfriend said she was pregnant. And I was like, okay, here it goes. This is how people work here 45 years. They have a family, and that makes it worth it, you know?
Right.
And I had to go. Tumble was in Southeast Iowa, and she was across the border in Missouri, and I had to go tell her dad. And her dad, you know, I'm 6'2", but her dad was 6'6", and he wanted to murder me when I told him I'd like to marry your daughter because she is having a baby with me. And this guy just, you know, but he ended up giving me permission. And then my girlfriend, thank God, told me that it wasn't true. And then I thought, okay, I got another chance at life, and then I could have kids, you know, when I get married. And so my first wife, Roseanne, we got married when I was 29 or 30. And I figured out, here's how I figured out it was trouble. When I went to the University of Iowa, I used to donate blood and plasma every week for beer money, you know, $7. And I worked at the hospital school, right? And I loved the kids, but I saw they put up signs for different jobs. They came up and said, donate sperm, $35. And I was like, holy hell.
That's a way better deal.
And I went back to my house and told my roommates, and we all went down, six of us, and ran down there. We couldn't have got there faster, because I was thinking $35. This is back in 1980 too. Then you could do that. I assumed you could do it as many times as you could do it. So maybe three times a day, $105. And they had nickel beer back then. And so we came busted in there. They had the Iowa Fertility Clinic, and they're like, slow down, boys. We have to test you. Yay, who's first? So they did, and they came back, and my buddies were good. But the doctor's like, I got some bad news, Mr. Arnold. You will never have a child the normal way. You don't have enough swimmers. And I said, how many swimmers do I have? And he said, 3. And I said, that seems like enough. And he's like, well, your friend has 3 million. So it's not enough. So I knew like early on that I had issues. And it was great though after that, because we'd have parties, and I'd casually say to women, you know, I can't get anybody pregnant. I just want to put that out there. Like that would make them more attracted to me and my insane roommates. And hey, the good news is you don't have to worry about that. Maybe the worst thing, I sweat on you and give you a staph infection. So you don't have to be, you won't be pregnant. But then when I got married to my first wife, Roseanne, she had kids, and I loved being a stepfather for the time before that, you know. But then we wanted to try, and I said, I have this problem. It's my issue. It's not yours. I don't want to do in vitro because that requires you getting shot up a lot with hormones. And, you know, the last thing I needed was her with hormones, but I also cared about her. And I said, let's adopt. This is what I've always said to all four of my wives. Let's adopt. Let's get a sperm donor. And for the entire time that Shaquille O'Neal played for the Lakers, he lived right next door to me. And I would think, you know, in Iowa, if you want to borrow a cup of sugar, you just go get your neighbor's house and say, can I borrow a cup of sugar? They're like, hell yeah. And so I thought, there are many times I thought, because we lived on this cul-de-sac when everybody hung out, I need to get a cup of Shaq. Because seriously, if I have a 7-foot-tall black son, I'm going to be the happiest guy in all of the States. And but that wife even said, no, I really want to try. And Roseanne and I tried 6 times. It didn't work. And then 7 times my second wife. And then 7 more times with my third wife. And by the way, all 3 of those women got married right after we were together and had babies the normal way. So I didn't ruin their bodies. And I was very relieved about that because I thought, you know, I had some guilt. But my fourth wife, I didn't plan on getting married. And I said, well, I do want to have a family. And so I'm not going to put you through in vitro. I've been there and it's too, you know, it's too, I've also been pregnant with a wife for months and then had that go away. So I said, I'm not going to do that to you, you know, I'll adopt or whatever. And then, you know, she said after we were married a bit, listen, I feel that I don't hold your record of your past against you, but I feel you're holding it against me because you won't let us do in vitro. And then we went back and forth and I said, okay, let's try it. And it did work. It did work. And then we said, okay, that's it. We were, you know, I really appreciate you trying. And then we had a thing, because I've always used the same fertility doctor, so I had to go down there and kind of close the accounts. She still had one egg down there, and they still had one sperm. Literally, this is, you know, because they're so good with it. And he said, that's not enough to juice you up with hormones. And so she was very disappointed because to her, you know, and to me, one sperm, one egg, you know. And then, but he said, I said, but it's too bad their science hasn't caught up and there's something you do on the man, because the woman has to go through all the shit. And the man, you know, when science catches up, we'll be back. And this guy's been a friend of mine. He was my neighbor, this brilliant fertility doctor, Richard Mars, M-A-R-R-S. He said, well, actually, Tom, there is something I'd like to try in a man. I saw my wife's ears perk up and I go, well, then I'm your guy. What is it? He goes, well, I was thinking about making a incision in your scrotum and taking your testicles out and then putting a needle right in there in case it's your tubing. And I was like, okay. And I run that by me in the hall next time. And now I'm in front of my own lady. And now I fucking have to do it. So I went in and did that. And they found one new sperm. And they put it at something called ICSI, where they take a needle that's that small and inject that one sperm into her egg. And 9 months later, we had my son. It was a miracle. And then my daughter, Quinn, my son Jax, my daughter Quinn, you know, we were not really together. And we were having our issues of making plans to divorce and things. And I was over at the house, my house. I was in my office, and we were still living in the same house. And the phone rang, and it was a cryobank in Long Beach. And they said, we're trying to get a hold of you. We don't have your new business manager, and you owe us $700. I said, why? And they said, because we have this frozen embryo from 4 years ago. And I was like, and then my wife at the time heard that and just drove straight to Long Beach. And she didn't really get juiced up like you're supposed to with the hormones for it to stick. But 9 months later, our daughter was born. And so that was a miracle. And people are like, I had people say, I said, whatever I get, whatever I'm blessed with, if I have to adopt, but you know, now they have I have a child, my son, and people would be like, yeah, but a daughter. I go, yeah, well, that's not going to happen. I've been more than blessed. And I have to tell you, it is different.
It isn't it?
grateful. It's great. I'm so grateful.
We're in the same boat. So I got the 16-year-old stepdaughter, but my firstborn, blood was my son. And then next one was the daughter. So two swings, two hits, one boy, one girl. And there's parallels, but raising them it's a completely separate thing. And we seem to get into this every podcast, Nick, mm-hmm. when we talk how different it is raising a daughter versus your son. How much more delicate you need to be when it comes to almost everything, whether it be, mm-hmm. Punishing them and teaching them and learning them. And even the way you talk, it's a crazy adventure, man. And I'm very excited and stoked for you that, it took a little time, man, but here you are.
I was 54 when I had my son and 57 when I had my daughter, but it's not their fault. Their dad's old. You got to get up and do it all with them. We just had a big game over here with my daughter, a more gentle game. I always like to spend a little extra time with her when her brother's at school. And very sweet. And she likes to do, worships her brother, but he sometimes treats her like a little brother. And I have four younger brothers, and I know how I treated them. And it makes it tough. And that's another thing about being so close together with the COVID stuff is, she can't, has been able to go to her girlfriends. They, time alone with each of them is extremely important to both of them. And that's something I've tried to convince their mother of. But I just don't take for granted. If she says, let's play this thing, let's get on the floor and play this ice cream game, I do it. And I love it. I love it. Let me ask you a question, though, who has a 16-year-old stepdaughter.
Yes.
Now, is your wife live with you?
Yes.
Okay, I always have to ask that because sometimes they don't.
And, she's currently right out there hanging out on the ocean.
Oh, good, good. Well, let me just say this from, Roseanne had, when we got married, she had an 11-year-old son, a 13-year-old daughter, and a 14-year-old daughter who lived with us. And I loved it. But I'm going to tell you, getting in between a mother, a teenage girl and her mother, first of all, my experience, it's the biggest, I can't even describe the relationships and love, hate, at a certain point, because genetically or our DNA, our kids are trained, they know they leave the nest like a bird, that there's something inside of them that it's time to leave at a certain point. But I'll tell you, those arguments, I try to get in and break them up or and then I had both of them turn on me. So,
almost weekly. It hasn't changed, man. And it's the same. We found that, I think about 95% of all the guests we talk to when it comes to stepchildren or even their own children, is spot on, nail on head. That is exactly what it is. And it happened 30 minutes before we got on with you. I'm going to give you an example, and it's the biggest pile of shit excuse I've ever heard in my life. Here it comes. You ready? She comes. Yeah. She walks down the hall. I'm sitting on the couch. I was actually doing a deep dive on YouTube on Tom Arnold. I watched the Hot Ones episode. Crack me up, man. We'll talk about that later. You poor son of a bitch. That that looked difficult.
That's a real show.
Oh, I know. She walks by, and she goes, "JP, can I eat in the bedroom?" Now, since she was 2 years old, no food in the bedroom. That's just one of the house rules, right? 16, can I bring the food in the bedroom? I just look at her. No. But I'm 16 now.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're 80. This is a rule. And then the attitude came, and then, we had to yell. And it's just the mind and the hormones, that they're all crazy. It's literally a heated argument started over the fact that she couldn't take her ramen in her room. And it's and that's a mild one. Yeah. I don't want to get in between the mom and her when they're going at it. Yeah. That is difficult.
But you're in a position where you have three kids and the other two, she's the oldest. And so if you let her eat her ramen noodles in the room, then you're setting up. And that's what I would go to. You want you know what ants are, right? I would do the whole thing. And your brother, your little brother, your little sister, they see that, and then they're going to start doing it. But it's also when you're about to do a show or something, you said it was a half hour ago or 50 minutes. Man, you just got to in your head go, is this going to be worth it? This argument, you got to, and you were strong. because I would have gone, okay, I'm getting ready to do a show. I got those guys. We're going to be on here live. I'd throw a towel down on her bed or wherever she was going to eat so she didn't ruin it and say, okay, this one time. And so I give in. You're good. But, you know, you also have a wife backing you up, man.
Yes.
You know, your partner. You have a partner. But you're right. You know, I'm learning. I make a lot of mistakes. And then I try to each night go, okay, what could I have done better? And, you know, again, with a girl, and I don't want to sound, but if my son says, I'm going to stay here in the hall and I'm going to lay on the floor, I'm not going anywhere because I said go to his room. You pick your son off the floor. My son weighs 130 pounds. He's first grade. He's a big kid, big head taller than everybody. And I will pick him up off the floor and carry him to his room because you are not disrupting our life out here. We're going to peacefully do what we were doing.
Right.
And you were out of control for a minute. So just go in your room. But I don't seem to have those issues with my daughter. But the last thing I'm saying, girls are smarter than boys. It's just a fact. Just a fact. And I can tell the way, you know, because my daughter, even though she's much smaller than my son, can make him cry. Make him weep.
Oh, same here. You mentioned it earlier, and I never put it into perspective or thought of it that way, but you are 100% correct when you said the little sister treats the big brother like the little brother. And that is exactly what happens with mine, my two. And my boy is more sensitive, too, than all the other kids, and he takes it and then, you know, has a meltdown, and I keep telling little, why are you treating him so bad? He's your brother. He's your big brother. He's your protector. And I go to him, why are you crying? She's your little sister. Why are you taking that? You're the man here, son. You know, ignore it. Take it. Leave the room. Do what you got. No, they're not applying any. Nick, you're laughing. No. Yeah, you've been through
this. I am laughing. I've been through it.
You have?
Yeah, so my kids are all older, and my wife and I just had a baby last year. So my kids are 14 years old to 22. So I was almost done. I got remarried. My wife didn't have kids. She's like, let's have a baby. And I was fixed. So we had to do the in vitro thing, and they worked out, and we have a 10-month-old little boy.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. It's weird being a parent again, though. Like going back when I was younger, it was like a lot of things were easier, but now, you know, the financial part's easier. The responsibility part's a lot easier and, you know, not worried about all kinds of stuff, but just watching my older kids interact the way what you're explaining now is hilarious. It's like, it doesn't get better.
I realize that's it. Why 10 months, man, that's the best time because you got them right here.
Yeah.
Right here. You could go take them over here, give them a bath, feed them, put them here, you know, and they're not running anywhere. They're not screaming. They're not, you know, they cry, but that's nothing. And they're not causing trouble. One doesn't want to go that way, and the other one that way. And just that baby time is the best. And
it's awesome. It is so good.
Unless, of course, you take it to Las Vegas like Nick did.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, we
Tom,
took the
Tom. 10 months I want to Vegas. I want you to meet my daughter that I was talking about. She's coming in here. She's okay, and you'll understand why I'm in so much trouble too. Okay. Come here. Real quick. Come on, girl. You got to say hi to Tom. Tom Arnold, this is my daughter, Chloe.
Yeah, she is. Hi, Chloe. Let me see. Has he got you a car yet? Because I was 16. I had a car.
Well, I actually did buy her a car, but then I sold it.
Yeah.
It was one of those fights we were talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you can buy your own car, Chloe. You get a job, sell stuff on the internet of your folks. Make it on there. Are you on social media?
Am I on social media?
Yeah.
Yeah, kinda.
Oh yeah. Are you what's your hobby? What do you do? What do you do with your time in your room with your ramen noodles?
With your ramen noodles. Yeah, you're attempted at ramen noodles. You're gonna get me in trouble, Tom.
I study Wiccan, so I spend a lot of my spare time doing that kind of stuff.
She studies Wiccan.
Are you still in school? What's that?
She studies Wiccan. Basically, she wants to be a witch. Yeah.
Are you a white witch?
Are you a white witch? Yes, hesitantly.
Do you have a doll that looks like your stepdad there that you could do stuff to? You know, I was married to a white witch. I've seen a lot of Wicca stuff in my life. My first wife, And then she, you know, and then when you break up with somebody that has all those skills, or then they try to hurt you. Is your mama also in Wicca?
No, I wish.
Studies Wicca? Okay. Well, you know, I have to say, for of all the things to rebel with, I'm not saying you're rebelling, I give you, but I feel really good about that. You know, I feel good.
Yeah.
They go the other way. You know, my kids, we're Jewish, but if all of a sudden they go, hey, I'm going to study Wicca, I'd go, okay, we'll do whatever you want.
Yeah, it's better than doing meth, right?
Do you have a boyfriend? Last question. Do you have a man or a woman friend that's, you know,
special? First boyfriend just happened a couple weeks ago.
Oh, my God. Well, he's very lucky. And he's lucky you have such a nice family. And before you get married, my sister was married. She was 14. And they're having a documentary series about her in a couple weeks called The Queen of Meth, for real, because she was a and my mom was 16. And my advice is pace yourself and make sure that this guy deserves you, because your family is also excellent. And I don't know how his family is, but you check into that. Because if you want to have a long marriage, you want to marry somebody that knows how to be a family and whose family will support you, you know, and you certainly have a great family.
Well, she's going to got at least 10 years before she gets married. So, you know,
you got to put a seat in there. You're beautiful. You're, and you have everything going. You're smart, beautiful. You have a great family. So you'll, whatever you want in this world, it's yours. That's a fact. And you don't even need Wicca for that, but I'm telling you it's true.
She said, thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
And there she goes. There's
so happy.
There's the daughter.
She just had her first boyfriend.
Beautiful, huh?
That's the way to pace, you know, because that's heartbreaking too. I don't want to. That can be to get, you know, first of all, we want our kids to be loved and liked. And, you know, I've had issues with my son because he's so much bigger than other kids, trying to mix it up with big kids.
Right.
And they don't want anything to do with him when they find out he's, you know, he just turned 8. You know, and then, you know, but they got to learn to get out there without us and learn to engage with people. But it's scary. You know, you never want your first boyfriend, your first breakup, your first whatever. I just can't even imagine.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to. I mean, you know, the numbers game says that boyfriend and her are going to break up sometime in the very near future, within a year. Yeah. I mean, just statistically speaking. And yeah. I don't, you never want to see your kids hurt and they're brokenhearted, but you know, this is my,
I suspect she'll hurt him. So if that,
yeah, I agree. I mean, you can't tell on the camera, but her mom as well. So mom is 5'9" and a half, 120 pounds. Chloe is now 5'10", taller than mom at 16. And we're talking your prototypical supermodel frame, and they're pretty to boot. So
yeah.
God help me. I could use prayers because I'm going to need
them. I'm not looking to cross this bridge anytime soon.
Exactly. You know, and that's the thing about the COVID and the pandemic. You do start thinking about living a day at a time. And, you know, you see all this stuff going on around the world. And you do, at least I do. I'm sober. But that helps. But, you know, with the kids, like, we didn't know when this thing was going to end, or there'd be school or this or that. So, you know, every day I'm like, well, let's make the most out of today. And then let's see, you know, as a parent, you have to think ahead, you know, a lot of things, but really we've been, you know, trying to focus on each day and not be, you know, because at the end, at least in my head, the end of every story in my head is just not good. And so you want to soak it up and enjoy each day. And you guys are certainly doing that.
We're trying, man. You know, this whole adventure with the dad cast too is helping. I worked 20 years. It still do in radio. I don't know if you can tell by the voice, but, I can tell it. And Nick, he has been doing concert promotions for the past, you know, 20 years. Those two career paths are how we met, here in Southern Oregon. And during the COVID, when it started, again, we're talking about things you know, lights at the end of the tunnel and the good things that have come out of this pandemic is this. He came to me and said, "You're the guy, let's do a podcast." And what should we do it about? And I'm like, he says, "We're dads." I named it. And here we are. And it has snowballed and matured into interviewing celebrity dads and humanizing them to show that, you know, you're just like us for the most part.
Right. True. Unfortunately, that's true.
Right.
It's really true. We're all, you know, you'd like to think, you know, as a dad, a little bit, but our life's different a little bit because I have to be aware of, you know, where we go, what we do. My kids are sensitive about people paying attention to me. But on the other hand,
I wanted to ask about that.
But on the other hand, they like it when, I get a bunch of positive attention, because people have seen movies or whatever. And I know that both of my kids have bragged about that. Not to me. You know, I actually heard my son say, "My dad is Tom Arnold." I mean, it's like he found out that one day because before their mom moved out, you know, we didn't watch Tom Arnold movies. There's kind of a feeling around. And I thought that's just not good. A lot of them are not for kids. And but once she moved out, you know, the kids just discovered things will come up that we watch a show. And because I've done such a variety, you know, I've been in over 130 movies. Odds are it's going to, my face going to come up somewhere. For them to realize that I was that Tom Arnold, you know, they know me as dad, but then, you know, and I have heard him say, "My dad's Tom Arnold," you know, like that, that, you know, like I'm,
isn't, you know, that something new for you though? I mean, you have been going through the last 40 years of your life as, you know, the celebrity movie star, TV star, and all facets of, you know, the whole genre. And now you are now known by your children as that guy. That can be, that to me would be like a whole new level of awesome. Oh my gosh, my kids now are like, "My dad's awesome because he's in movies," or whatever.
Yeah. I think that that would be wonderful. And I think that when you have kids, you do give up your you're like number two, number three, you know it immediately. You know what? I'd always, because I had a weird family growing up. My dad raised myself, my sister, the Queen of Meth, and my brother. And our mom would come in and out, and she was alcoholic and crazy, did drugs. And so it was different. If you grow up with a family like that in a small farming community, people are going to give you shit all the time. You better be ready to fight everybody. But I think that the way my fame or whatever you call it, like people that see me know me, and it hasn't been like some untouchable movie star that you just imagine. It's been like a guy that you know, I've been married before. You probably know who. You've seen me do very personal things, and that's a great thing, you know, and I think, and it's also, you know, and also going to be divorced from their mom, you know, there's because you're not getting, the kids aren't hearing anything good about Tom Arnold over there.
Right.
In fact, the opposite. And so I don't say anything negative ever about their mother. If she pulls a stunt in the yard or does something very inappropriate in front of the kids, which it always is, or calls the cops or does whatever,
right,
then I will, after I show the cops the video of what didn't happen, I'll tell the kids, "Hey, you know what? What just happened was not okay. What your mother did, I don't treat her like that. I don't want anybody, I would treat you like that." And we take a moment because my dad would never say, you know, he didn't want to badmouth my mom, but she come over at like at Christmas and knock down the tree and just be lisping and drunk. And he never said, "You know what? You just saw kids, that wasn't okay." And I knew that my mom was not a mom. I mean, I knew that, I don't remember them together, but she actually said, "I'm not maternal. You know, this isn't for me. I'm not going to tell you I love you, but I'm going to touch your knee once in a while, then you'll know." And when she came over, she'd bring a dollar. That's why I wanted her to come over, because I could get 10 candy bars for a dollar. And you also know when people don't want to be with you. Kids, I'm aware of that all the time, because as a kid, you know, I had one grandmother that really didn't say anything, but she loved me so much and everything I did, and just liked sitting by me, sitting next to me and cooking for me. And my grandpa Tom, you know, he's a badass. He's a big guy. He was in sports, a big, and he, once in a while he'd get mad at me. We're skinny squirrels or something and did it wrong. And then she would just give him a look like, and then he'd have to come back out and go, listen, I know you're your grandma's favorite. I just got to say, I'm sorry that whatever happened, but and, you know, sometimes he should have got mad at me, but you know, you get that feeling. And I think that, you know, my sister never heard, oh, what just happened to your mom? So she had a twisted sense of reality. And so when my sister, I moved out of my dad's house when I was 15, because I wanted to fucking party and I wanted to grow my hair, and then moved in with my mom. And you could do all that. You could do it. She didn't care what you did. And my sister did it when she was 14. And she was, those two were best friends. They went to bars together. They, you know, they had pictures taken at Sears together, which you can see on that documentary, which is so weird. But my mom, you know, because she'd married my dad at 16. I don't know what was, that she was alcoholic. She took my sister. She found out she was dating this 23-year-old scumbag from our town. There's a lot of them. And she said, you can either break up with him or I'm having him arrested because, you know, he's a serial pedophile, or you can marry him. And my sister's 14, you know, thinks she has her shit together. She's like, well, they were getting married. And so my mother drove them to Missouri and made her marry this guy who had already been divorced from a 15-year-old, and it ended up beating her and cheating on her with a 12-year-old. I ended up having to go over there, you know, because as you guys know, you know, sometimes you have to fight adults when you're, you don't, you know, but I went over there and got her, and that just that mistake that because she was not a mother. She was not, that was such a terrible thing to do to your child. And that changed the trajectory of my sister's life. Because she'd been doing great in school. She was a good athlete. People liked her. And then suddenly she was married to this scumbag and living in their little apartment. And I just remember, I found out mom was driving him down there, mom and Kenny, her sixth out of seventh husband. And I called my dad and said, we got to get on the highway. We got to block them. Where do you think they're going? To Lancaster, to wherever. And we did do it. And then my mom came home with my stepdad wasted, as always. And my sister wasn't there, because she moved into her apartment. Her life, you know, you talk about end of innocence, and you know, you hear a lot of stories about, you know, what you worry about as a father, your daughter's virginity or son's virginity. But this is, you know, this was really the end of innocence with
that's
her. And her life
a whole other level.
But, yeah, can you believe that? Can you believe that? And so,
no, that's so the documentary. I'm sorry, that's a crappy mom.
Yeah, it is a crappy mom. And so my sister is up in prison two times and being the biggest meth dealer, dealing with a Mexican cartel, bringing meth to the Midwest, and, you know, prostituted herself, they don't call it that, but she went and lived with a woman who ran all the big card games in our town, the high money ones. And she had girls living with her, and she could supply drugs, girls, or play cards. And you know, my sister was like, this is so amazing. She's taking me in. And so soon my sister's like, well, if she's making this on drugs, I bet I can make more. And then she'd put her business skills together and just, it, you know, but that mistake, and those, we all make mistakes, guys. As fathers, we make mistakes, you know, we say things we shouldn't. I always apologize too. I probably don't always apologize because I don't know what I did, but if I blow up and you hear the bad words and, you know, get your ass off the floor and get it, you know, we all heard worse when we were younger, but then I'll go ahead and talk and say, I'm sorry. I do remember our dad apologizing to us. I don't remember everything about when we were super young, but I do know one time my youngest brother of the original three of us, swallowed the babysitter's hearing aid.
Oh, no.
And Dad screamed at us, and then he apologized, and we had to sit there. Our babysitter was deaf, and we had to sit there until my brother pooped to get her hearing aid back. And Dad would say, Daisy, are you okay? And she'd be like, what? I'd actually put the hearing aid in his mouth. I didn't, you know, I should have been yelled out, but he came and said, I'm sorry about that. That really stuck in my head. And so I do, my kids say I talk too much, But when I do something that was, you know, out of line with, you know, I will sit with each of them privately and say, I'm sorry that that happened. And, you know, I'm going to do better. And then to keep talking until they're like, that's enough. But, you know, there's big mistakes that we are not going to make.
Nope. You know, I was fortunate, you know, myself, my story, my dad got divorced from my mother when I was 2 or 3. I don't remember that, but then remarried my stepmom when I was 7. And they were together from, you know, 5 years old to 7. So the formative years that I can remember, my stepmom was my mom. You know, I still visited my mom. She wasn't bad. I just distance, and I didn't see her much. She had a much closer relationship with my siblings. So my stepmom was my mom, and my dad was just top notch. I'm lucky. He was a great, great, great man. So the foundation was set in me to be the good dad that I am to my children. And I'm pretty proud of that fact. And, you know, everything I do and everything I will do, you know, till the day I die, even when they're adults, it's for them to have a quality life that, you know, they can tell their kids about how great their dad was. At least I hope that's, you know, if I'm half the dad my dad was to me, I'm 100% successful.
Yeah. Well, you know, another thing too, you were a step kid, and yes. I was also a step kid because when I was 10, dad married the next door neighbor, you know, because he didn't get out much. And he asked us that there was three of us still, and she had 2 little kids. I said, do you guys mind if I marry her? And of course we said, of course you can, because we wanted our dad to be happy. And she wasn't a big fan of me. And I'm sure I made it hard on her because we'd had our dad to ourselves.
I did too.
And so then they immediately had 2 more kids. So then there were 7 of us. And, you know, I was older and bigger. You know, I didn't dig her corporal punishment stuff. And so eventually I felt like outside of the family. And then I moved in with my grandparents, who were wonderful, except the first day I lived there when I was 12, I came home with a black eye from school, which happens a lot. And I was eating with my grandpa and grandma, and my grandpa just buried her face in her hands and started weeping. This isn't the one that doesn't talk. This is Dottie. Dort's the one that didn't talk much. And just started weeping. And my grandma's like, what's wrong with you? And Steve, it was because of my eye. She'd see a black eye, a simple black eye. And I knew then, I'm not going to be here long.
Right.
You know, but I think that it taught me how to be a better stepfather, because I know what it feels like to be treated less, you know, and being a stepfather is such a privilege, a stepmother, a stepfather, such an honor and privilege. And with Roseanne's kid, I was very cognizant of, you know, that feeling like, oh, that's my stepmother, my stepfather, or how everybody's treated a little less, you know. And so, you know, I try to be, you know, better. And also in my family, I have stepbrothers, half-brothers, you know, and even the kids next door, I knew them since they were born. So we don't... In our family, people getting along, there's no, you know, dip. We've grown up. It's been really good because everybody, you get along with some part of the family, and it may be your half brother or your stepbrother better than the other parts. And so I think it in a ways it's been good because you can't get along with everybody. If you got 7, no. You know, somebody's fighting, somebody's politics are different, somebody, you know, parents different or whatever. And so I think it's a blessing.
Absolutely it is. And my dynamic as being a stepdad with her, her dad is in her life and he's awesome.
Oh,
he's a great guy too.
That's the best.
So, you know, the only issue, if you want to call it that, with parenting is the different styles and the different households. They both have different rules, and, you know, she'll spend some time over there, get used to it, then come over here and be like, it's different. And then back over there, it's different. So we, you know, we're bouncing between that. But if that's the least,
I hear that a lot, and what I found, my experience in this case, is that my ex-wife wants to be in the house, in my house too, and telling everybody what to do, and you know, when you have, I wish we could co-parent, but we've been unable to. because I would love to get the best of her. You know, she is my kid's mother.
Yeah.
And the best of me, because, and then put that together. And they, it may be, you know, they can have a similar rules or whatever, similar food or similar, but you've got to respect each other. And there needs to be at least fake it. You have to fake respecting each other in front of the kids. And that, yeah, it's not just because I'm an actor that I could do that.
No, that's real. That's real talk. Yeah. That's,
but it is. Yeah. And you know, this woman had my children. She is the mother of my children. And you just can't get over that. You look at them and you and her, and I think, oh, I'm going to have this love for her for doing this forever. And so let's get over your shit. You know, let's, you know, and I assume you feel the same way. So what we have in common is the most important thing to have in common is these two kids. So you need to, everybody needs to get over themselves. And, you know, I also come from a, you know, my the way I look at marriage is to, of course you're in it to win it. You're in it forever. You don't break the big rules. You just don't. The big rules, you don't break them. And people can break them and deal with it. But I just don't, you don't do that. Because my thinking was, I'm not going to be that guy that lives in regret forever because I did something atrocious in this. And it's also just the way good people operate. And, you know, you got to have each other's backs. Yep. I say you look at the family because I speak from experience. And I'm sure that, I've learned a few things, but that's kind of my theory of, you know, and you don't want to go to court all the time. And I'm so jealous of you your wife's ex, because that is the way for the kids. That is the way to do it. And if they see kids feel friction between their parents a lot, and it's the worst thing for the kids. And there's once in a while you have to have a frank conversation with you. Well, why don't you, you know, why doesn't mom come over here? Well, she's invited all the time. And by the way, every time she invites me, I ran up to her apartment. I laid on her bed with you for 4 hours when you're sick. So this is what I do. And maybe one day, you know, but one day she'll get to a place where,
well, you'd hope so, man. But you know, people are,
I don't know. I'm not counting on it at all.
Yeah. Do you have full custody? I know that's personal, but are you,
we have 50-50 custody.
Okay.
Because of dad, daughter, son, dad days, you know, it's, you know, they spend more time here, but also, you know, when I work, you know, and I haven't worked a lot in the last year and a half, but, you know, like I had to go to Italy to film two movies. So I had to be for a certain period of time. And so everything, unfortunately, with us has to be that's in a stipulation in writing. And then so I get the kids for that period of time right when I get back. And so my dream is to work and then have my kids, like to go and film a movie or film movies. And then the rest of the time have the kids here. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's wishful thinking. But, you know, so far, and I will say this about going to court, and we've been to court each time she's filed domestic violence restraining orders. She's tried to, they got thrown out of court. It's kind of ridiculous stuff. And the judge said, you know, the judge was somebody that crafted the California domestic violence law. And she said, if you or your lawyer ever bring this garbage here again, that you guys are going in. And so, you know, this is after a period of her calling the cops. Always the kids were there. And you know, I have a relationship with the police, specific police, because of this.
Yeah.
Where they say, listen, if you know she's doing it, call this number so we can send it and tell not to go over there. But, you know, I'm grateful that, you know, I've got cameras. I got 21 cameras inside and outside our house. You know, it's good for security, but it's also good because, you know, if she says, well, this happened or that happened, I just cut the film and say, you know, you decide. Yeah. And so my hopes is that she get over it because it's been incredibly expensive. You know, I was married. I didn't have a prenup. And I said, you know, you're in it to win it, especially you're in it, you know, and you look out for the finances. I'm just going to work. I'm going to put my head down, work. And so there's no money to be fighting over. I think it's just the last thing she did is pretty funny. I'd say it's kind of funny, but I posted some of this, but she filed a court, 145 counts of contempt of court, which is actually a criminal thing. So I think because she'd gotten thrown out of court with those other things, she goes, well, I'm going to do this contempt of court, which is criminal, which, as the judge pointed out, I represented myself at first, that it was it's over 2 years in jail.
Right.
And there are things like late on FaceTime, a kid playing video game. And the judge, you know, they don't like to see that, especially in family court. It just scratched them all out, all but five. He said, I don't know what this is, this FaceTime thing. And then I did get a lawyer because he's like, Mr. Arnold, they are trying to put you in jail. And he asked her, I have the transcripts are pretty funny. He said to her lawyer, you could tell he was pissed when we got in there. Like, do you think the punishment fits the crime here? And he's like, well, judge, that's the law. And he said to both of them, do you think this is good for the kids?
Right.
That their dad goes to jail for over 2 years. And, you know, they're like, well, that's, you know, he won't follow the rules. and so, you know, and then he said, well, that's, what he said at the end is, do you think it's a good use of my time? He said to her lawyer,
right.
Me, the court during COVID, to get a jury together, you know, and how much it's going to cost us, the state, and how much. And then the guy's like, well, we would consider cutting it down to the minimum, which is 6 months in jail, where you don't have to have a jury. Like, just trying so bad. And you know, the you know, I posted a few videos of, you know, things that she's done, and, you know, coming to the house. I had one last summer where she tried to lure me out of the house with the kids, and my neighbor, it's brilliant. I have to, you guys would love this one, because that she pulls up front, and then my neighbor cuts around in front of her car and comes to my back door. And I never was knocking on it. I never see anybody in my back door. And then it shows the interior. The kids are getting ready to take their stuff and go to mom's. And she says, there is a man in the bushes in front of my house right over here. And I think he's going to jump out when you come out with the kids and, you know, serve you or whatever. And so I 30 seconds later, she rang the doorbell, and I go to the doorbell and say, hey, is there a guy like in the bushes over there? She's like, no, no. I go, seriously, the neighbor just said, I go, I'm not sending the kids out there if there's a weirdo in the bushes. And then we went back in the house, and she's threatening to call. She's on the thing. I'm calling police. And so the kids and I came out in the backyard, and we go, here's what, there's a guy in the bushes. First of all, I sent my son out there with his iPad. I go, son, go out there and see if there's a guy in the bushes. Film it. And then it was very funny what she did. But we came in the back house here, and he said, I said, we got to get out. I got to get you guys to your mom's car without being seen here. So we did. The kids are very fun. And we go out the side where this other side of the house where my car would be blocking that, and got the kids in the car. And then the guy, you know, ended up throwing a stack. And it was for the contempt stuff. But I think that just doing that and thinking, this is a good idea. And her mom was in the car there. I'm going to get him out of the house and in front of the kids have this guy serve him, you know, and you know, there's another video where we're riding in our car. I'm taking the kids over there. I wasn't filming until my son said he saw a police car behind us. So I put on my cam. You can't see the kids. And just how cool everybody was. My daughter was asleep in the back, and a car did circle, you know, do a U-turn behind us. And then my son actually wants me to get arrested and get the lights on. He loves, because he wants to be a cop, you know.
Well, take him on a ride along, man. Dad doesn't need to get arrested.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'll send you this video. It's pretty fun. He's like my wingman, you know. And he's like, I go, just because a police officer did a U-turn in the street doesn't mean they're behind me. And then he's like, well, mom is with them and she's in her car. I was like, okay. So we pull up. And she lives on a very busy street here in an apartment building. And the intention was that she said, had her photographer, tabloid friends ready to shoot this. And the idea was, in her mind, is like, they're going to pull him out of the car and just be, you know. But I pull up, and the poor cops that do this job, let me tell you something, man, going to the domestic things, people's house, it's a, you know, I can't say enough. And I've gotten to know these men and women, and they're amazing. And so I pull up. They want me to stop for the house, but there's no parking. Yeah, there's never any parking, by the way. And so I say, I'm gonna go down here by the bus stop. And then I did a U-ey in the street. And they're all, my ex-wife, her sister, the family's out there ready to finally see me taken down. And I did a U-turn in the street and then went right into the parking, under the building. I disappeared. It was beautiful. And you could see it go dark. And then I get ready and you could see, I get my daughter out and she's still sleeping. And I got her, you know, and then with my ex ran down the ramp. And the policeman, the cops came down. I had my daughter quietly, you know, so I didn't disturb her sleep. And it was just, you know, and I thanked the cops, of course. I think, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to have to do that. But just how cool, casual my son was about it, because, you know, he's seen more cops than some inner city kids, you know, real.
Yeah.
And you know, and he wants to be a cop. And so but I still want to co-parent, because in the best case scenario, but you also got to be paired, you know, and I'm older too. And, you know, I had a big health scare last year. I had massive organ failure. And, you know, you think about that. You come out, I was on life support for 11 days. And I just kept thinking, I have to get out here and get my kids. And I was afraid that I would be because at first they're like, you know, when I kind of came to, they're like, yeah, your life's going to be not going to be the same. You're not going to be able to run around with your kids. You're going to go from here to a rehabilitation center where your heart, your lungs. And I was like, that, you know, that's just not going to happen. That's not okay. And because I'm blessed, and because I have this heart camp, this famous heart camp for kids, Camp Del Corazon, which is the biggest heart camp in America for kids with heart defects and heart disease. I know a lot of doctors, and you guys know this, you know, getting the access to insurance or great doctors is everything. And so, you know, I'm very blessed, and I got out of there about 15 days later. Shocking. They went over to her place. She knew I was in there. She knew I was on life support. And by the way, when I was first in there, she was still somehow, because she'd hired a business manager that was friends with her family. She was still had my power of attorney. So like she could have pulled the plug and, you know, right. my lawyer in the middle of the night went to her house and made her sign off on that. And so, but I went over there to pick up the kids. I had to get, you know, she wanted to go, I had to send her some legal thing because, you know, she's like, well, what's wrong with you? What medications are you on? You're on heart medications, but you know, and so I went into her lobby, I'd been kicked out of her, banned from her lobby, and just for no reason. And I went in there, the kids run up, and I am a little winded. I have to say, if you're on one of those ECMO machines for a period of time, you're a little, you know, but you don't show that from your kids. And so they ran up, we're hugging, and then all of a sudden I hear, he's banned from here. And upstairs they have second floor open, terrace, and she's like, he's not supposed to be in here, like just got out of the hospital. And so I grabbed their stuff. They had a bunch of stuff because they'd taken a bunch of stuff in my house. I had to pull this cart, and the stairs kind of go up, and then you kind of go up to Barrington. And I was holding that cart like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull this cart, because, you know, but I didn't want to have to sit down or lay down. And I just got it out there, and I had my the housekeeper who looks after the kids with the shoes out there. She just took it, you know, but I thought sometimes things are so funny because they're so ridiculous. And I think that, you know, that is one of those things that if we get on the other side of this, look back and go, well, that was pretty ridiculous. So ridiculous. It's funny, but you know, and the kids are like, you know, people keep telling me, hey, listen, when they grow up, they're going to know, they'll figure out who's who in the whole story.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say earlier. And, you know, man to man, dad to dad, I know you and I, we've only just met, but I know you're hoping for the co-parenting thing on the other side, but I'm just throwing this out there. Yeah. I think you're better off the way it is now stories I'm hearing. No,
it is under these circumstances, 100%. And, you know, I am grateful for every day. And so, yeah, it's not, you know, but it's not that I'm not, you know, I would be willing if she was. I mean, that's would be the best thing for the kids.
Well, again, that's a true testament to you and your role as a father. That, you know, that might not have been the case before you became a dad. And now look at you, Tom Arnold.
Yeah, look at me. So, you know, you're right. It's not, I'm also expecting someone to change whatever it is about them. And you know, I've changed because I've gotten sober, and I've also worked on myself and my issues. You know, I've been married and divorced four times. That doesn't just, you know, that doesn't just happen. But you got to say, well, how do I make better choices? How do I, you know, I want to show my kids that they don't have to do the things I did.
Right.
And they don't have to go through this nonsense with their parents, you know, as little as possible. Let's put it that way. So, you know, you deal. There's worse thing. Every day I wake up and the kids were supposed to sleep in their own bedrooms. I did beautiful bedrooms in this house. My daughter, I got the Murphy beds, and then beautiful for more space in the rooms, and pink and, you know, unicorns and just everything. And it's got a sky. I really did hers. And then my son collects elves. I didn't even want to get into, you know, like Elf on the Shelf and then bigger, smaller, whatever. He collects a lot of things, you know. And so his bedroom, I did like he would like it. And, you know, they got their screens in there, their TV and their smart TVs. And they got both have gamer chairs, just like that one I see from. Oh, you have a white one. My daughter's is pink, and my son's is exactly like his. But they sleep in my bed every night.
My friggin' my littlest, she's going to be 8 in a month, and she's slept in her own bed maybe 30 days of her life, and 15 of those were when she was a baby. So it's. We're thinking at some point here, I've stopped fighting that battle.
Right.
It's going to happen on her own eventually. This is weird. I want to sleep in my own bed, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Well, my son's never slept in his bed ever. My daughter has maybe two or three times when Sasha stays over, my assistant, who's just wonderful with the kids. And, you know, she'll say, I'm going to watch whatever show with Sasha in here. And then she'll sleep in there. She does come in very early in the morning, though. And I'll tell you why I did. Because I was like, well, it doesn't seem this is going to change. So I'm going to get a craftmatic beds. Like, I got two side by side. Like, and then each kid gets a remote control. And, you know, make it how you want it. How you going to, you know. It's also, they have some massaging thing to it. So the rare times I get to be in there, you know, alone, I do that. So. My life is built around the kids, as it should be. And I think organically, there'll be a day when it stops and they're all doing their own roofs and their own friends and their own. And that's the right thing. But I'm 100% sure I'll be sad about it, too. My kids, I have to say, they've taught me that I could live that I don't need. We had a huge house, the last house. And then we had, you know, I've had to downsize because of my income and divorce. And then we got this much smaller house and, you know, two bedrooms, three bathrooms, very, you know, I don't know if it's even maybe 1800 feet, 1700 feet, 16, maybe less. It's got this back house, which helps with my office and stuff. But we really, for the last couple years before their mom moved, the kids, I lived in the master suite area. We didn't go even, everything could happen there. We could have to be in the bathroom there. We had to, you know, and everything. We lived our life in this area, this small area, big for one room. But I thought, well, we don't need all of this. And it's a good thing because, you know, that I can't have all of that. And, but, you know, we live, I live a much simpler life, but we use everything now, every bed, except for their bedrooms.
Right. Every square inch, but the damn bedroom. Well, my son, thankfully, he grew out of it. He was about 3.5, 4, and he decided I'm going to go sleep in my bed. And he hasn't looked back. The issue we have now is we have a 3-bedroom house and 3 kids. And mom and dad take one. So 10-year-old and 7-year-old share. I think Avery, my littlest, doesn't want to sleep in that bedroom because it's not hers to herself. And of course, Big Brother, who's been in there alone most of the time, is automatically assuming it's all his bedroom. So here's another dynamic first world problems as parents that you have to deal with. And, you know, hopefully Dadcast things have become so successful. I just want a 4-bedroom house so each kid can have their own room for another year. And then Chloe's going to move out. And then the problem has disappeared anyway. So, anyway.
Yeah, Chloe's never going to move out.
The way things are, I bet.
Yeah. Well, that's true. We have 7 kids in my original family. So, and 5 boys. So my dad gave my sisters each a bedroom. And then it was a 4-bedroom house. And then the 5 boys are on bunk beds, like the freaking army in the other room. And there was no bathroom upstairs. And so my dad several times had to paint the side of the house because of the yellow streaks out of our window. Because, or I should say, we had to paint it.
That's actually a great idea. I never thought of that. My window is much closer to the bathroom is.
Well,
you may be onto something.
I mean, you could get, if you're in the hospital, they give you one of those things, those bucket things.
Yeah.
You just bring it home. Yeah, let me tell you, I'm driving to school. And we had to drive, Mulholland down here. It's so busy. It's a busy, and the kids' school's on the other, last 5 years, on the other side of that hill. So I'd have to, in the morning, we'd get in the car. And, a lot of times the kids still had diapers on, so they can pee whenever they want. But even after that, and I brought I had a big mouth, one of those jugs to put water or sport drink. Uh-huh. And, man, you got to have that ready to go. And you just, because there's no place for dad to pee. And especially since I'm older, we get stuck in traffic and it's not going anywhere. And, you got to just have that and just get really good at doing this. And always remember to clean it out when you get home. But you do what you got to do. And I've had my son, we would drive by my lawyer's house on Deep Canyon up there to Mulholland. And it triggered something my son because I let him poop there once.
Oh, no. And,
so every time we go by this same house, he's like, I have to poop. I said, no. But, we pottied in the street. I got to carry a big towel in case I had to surround him. And if the kids, the times that the kids had to pee-pee in the street, it's always triggered me where I take care of them. And I'm like, now I have to do this. And so being the kind of dad that goes with the flow, I think it's been helpful.
That's why I got the hell out of L.A. I grew up down there, man. 30 years of my life. I moved to Oregon probably because the traffic. I go and visit and all the anxiety comes back. It's it's tragic. Traffic down there.
And the story about me peeing in the jug, you'd think that moms would appreciate that, but no woman likes any story about having an emergency pee or poo or they just don't, they'll be on board. I'll be talking because I talk to a lot of moms at school, when waiting outside or doing stuff and they're on board with me until that.
I wish we could have spoken, 8 years ago before Jax was born, man. And I would have let you know that no. And the poop and farts, they stick with the dads on that one.
Exactly.
And my daughter, because again, I grew up in big farms, and there's lots of places to pee pee. And my daughter, one day we're back here, and she said, "Can I go potty outside?" And I said, "Yeah." And then she just takes off her, and she does it standing up like her brother. And then the next time we were out here, she said, "Can I do that?" I said, "Yeah, you can, but I want to teach you something, because we may be camping or somewhere. I just want to show you. And this is how it makes it easier for a girl to pee outside, kind of bent over." I wanted her to know that. I thought that's a skill that I could give my kids.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. And so, I just say, I just want to show you how it can be easier. This is how girls pee pee outside.
I would have just been said, back in the day, this is how mom did it when we left drunk from the bar. Okay. So this is how it works.
Of course. Never know when you have an emergency.
All right, Tom, man, we are pretty much out of time. I mean, I'll keep going if you want to keep going, man.
Listen, I want to say something. I listen to you guys, and I like the way you guys look too. I have to say that other dad things, you know, you go, well, who is that guy that's talking to me? He seems like a teacher, an expert, and you guys are just down home dads, and it's nice to. That's why I really wanted to be a part of this, and I hope it blows up huge, and you certainly deserve it.
Well, we appreciate that, man. We pride ourselves on being just two real guys, man, who, you know, real normal dads who go through it just like you. And, you know, to hear you say that, man, that is, I appreciate that, man. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much.
Now, but before you leave, I have one request of you.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure you get this. Maybe not for a while, but can you give me the Ice Cube Trey line from True Lies?
I do get that. And there's memes of that scene. And I believe it was when Arnold came out of, he just found out he thought his wife was cheating on him.
Yep.
We're out on the street. I think it's that scene.
Yep.
And the other thing I ad-libbed was fucker with the bus, because there's a stunt guy was driving the bus and he about hit Arnold. Yeah. So like in the middle of this scene, and that was not in the script. He's a nice guy, stunt guy, but he got very close to us. And poor Arnold was in a daze. And what happened that day earlier was I came into work and, you know, I was going through a divorce, believe it or not, then too. And I said, you know, the night before somebody came into my house and taken all the batteries out of all the remote controls. Like that's all they did. And I, you know, I still tried to make them work. And I thought, who's that devious that would do this? And then Arnold and I were doing shakes. You know, he came over to my house to, I'll tell you, before we started the movie, James Cameron, the director's like, would you like Arnold to come over to your house and train with you? And I'm like, yeah, I believe I would like the greatest bodybuilder ever to come to my home, work out in my unused home gym. And so he came the first morning we were getting ready to work, and he came right early, and I opened the door. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot you were coming, man. Everybody I've ever met is here. Okay, guys, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. We're working out. And so we worked out, and then the next night, Jim Cameron's like, well, what time should Arnold be there tomorrow? I go, oh no, we're not, I'm done. He said, why? I said, well, now I can say I worked out with Arnold Schwarzenegger, but working out with him because he's so good. He's so excellent. He tries to help, you know, people, me. And so first thing he does is he looks at your body. He's like, it has to give you a compliment. He starts out there, you know, Tom, you have fantastic shins.
Yeah.
You know? And then he starts into my trouble spots, and I got a lot of trouble spots. So, we were doing shakes. And I said, I'll still do that. We'll drink our shakes, blend them up, needs a lot of ice, special, make sure that he had. And I had a bunch of extra ice cube tray, just filled up. And I came in on the morning to make my shake, and there was no, the only thing missing from the house was the ice cube trays. And Roseanne had she or someone had stuck into my house. And so I went to work that morning. I told him what happened. I go, what kind of a sick bitch takes the ice cube trays out of the freezer? Like for real. And Jim Cameron's like, say that in this next scene. And so I talked about my ex-wife taking this ice cube trays out of the freezer. It was real. And a lot of True Lies is very real. Arnold and I's relationship is similar to this day. He was the first person at the hospital when my son was born. My kids love him. You know, he's got a little horse. He's got a miniature horse. And I got a video. I took Jax over to his place. He's got his, and Jax had he doesn't grow up on a farm like me. So he took a carrot and shoved it into the horse's mouth. And the horse bit down a little bit, you know, they'll do. And I got Jax's face like, he's Arnold Schwarzenegger is one of the best human beings that I not only know, but in my lifetime, what he has done for, you know, he loves this country so much. Nobody, and that's another thing. I filmed in Washington, D.C. with Arnold. And, you know, the monuments, when you land in Washington, D.C., it's so, you're like, oh, my God, look, here's the Lincoln Memorial and the White House and the you know, the Capitol. And you get a little chill, I do. But he, this dude, you know, he's an immigrant that freaking loves this country. And so he said, you know, we had there was a stop down. We were filming on Constitution Avenue, which is a big street there. I bet you can't even film there anymore. And a light went out over here, and he's like, and Bill Paxton was in the back seat. And I love Bill Paxton, man. That guy was so funny.
Yeah, rest in peace, man.
And so loved life. You know, he loved every day of filming. He loved life. He loved his family. And very sad that he's gone. But Bill's in the back seat. Arnold and I were in the front in this SUV. And I love making Bill Paxton laugh because, yeah, making fun of Arnold was the best way because he nobody else would do that. And Bill Paxton was very close to Jim Cameron. They started the business together. They started when they were like distressing tables. They were working on sets, building sets. They go way back. And so I got a lot of fun stuff to say about Jim Cameron from Bill Paxton. So Bill's in the back and Arnold's like, you know, the lights, it burned up. It's going to be 20 minutes. I'm going to take you guys on a tour of the monuments. And again, I love the monuments, but seeing it through his eyes is so annoying. He's like, this is Jefferson, or this is what happened here. And he's so fabulous. And I look at Bill Paxton like, okay, yeah, this is. And so we came back around the street to get back in our position. And Jim Cameron's standing in the middle of the street like this. And Jim Cameron's not a small guy. He's a 6'3" raw boned Canadian. And he'll get it going. And so Arnold stopped the car and he put his hands on the hood. It comes around to my side and opens the door and crawls over me and says, "Hey, motherfucker, you do stuff like that again, I'm going to have Paul Verhoeven finish this movie." Then he gets out and I get back in the car and I'm like, "Are you going to take that shit for that bugger?" Right. And look at all the people watching, because there's hundreds of people. And Arnold did something that really is important to me. And it's a good lesson. He's like, "I have to. I fucked up." And that was an important thing to see. You know, but those guys are best buddies, too. You know, we're all still great friends. And, you know, once in a while we get mad at our brothers, our buddies. But it was Arnold's reaction. Like, you know, here at that time, you know, he's the biggest star in the world. He could have said, "Oh, this is," but he said, "You know, I fuck up. It took 2 minutes to fix that light,
right?
Not 20. So they had traffic blocked on that street, and that was a big deal. So, all right, guys, what's happening?
Who's that looking out the door right now? Oh, okay. You want to wait one more child, then we'll end this thing. Sawyer, get over here. I want you to meet my new friend, Tom Arnold. And in about 2 years, you know what? Screw it. We're watching True Lies tonight.
Yeah. Yes, how are you,
Sawyer? How are you? This is Tom Arnold.
Tom Arnold. I'm sure there maybe are some other movies you could watch. Right, how old are you, son?
How old are you?
18.
And he's out of here.
That sounds like my kid.
He's 10. He's 10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good age. Time of your life. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah, it is.
All downhill
from here. All right, get out of here, boy.
All right. But you could watch True Lies with a 10-year-old. You know, you can watch.
You definitely should watch that. It's one of the greatest Soul movies.
If I had Arnold on the show, I would have asked him to do "It's a Snow Cone." "It's a Snow Cone Maker." That's one of my favorite lines, too.
You know, my son has a poster of Arnold Schwarzenegger in his bedroom. And it's one of the ones that I like because it's early bodybuilding. Right, it's a really cool picture. And again, here's a guy. Let's just say it's about Arnold. Every dream he's ever had, he's done it. You know, he came to this country. He couldn't hardly speak English. He still can't a little bit. His name is mispronounceable. And he became the biggest movie star in the world. And he's such a big businessman. You know, he's a billionaire for doing things. And his charities raised over $1 billion for charities himself. And they're all kids' charities. They're all like, you know, the inner city games or, you know, the after school all-stars about school, about getting, you know, and his bodybuilding. I mean, he changed not just bodybuilding, but fitness.
Right.
And he knows so much about it. And, you know, he's so, you know, popular all over the world, but he really is. Sometimes I can't believe we're friends. Like, he was a guy I knew who he was when I was at the meatpacking plant, you know, and to be good friends with him has been such an honor. So
that's amazing. Yeah. And he's one of my unicorns to have on the show. So wink, wink, Tom, if you really had a good time today and you wanted to drop a good word, we'd appreciate it, man.
He's funny too. You know, you find out that he loves to laugh, man. He just loves it. And if anything gets too, you know, serious, he just loves it. And, you know, and last thing I'm going to say is a father, he told me when Jack's born, change every diaper, you know, change every diaper. Don't let anybody tell you can't do it. You know, and he, with his first child, people would be like, oh, no, Arnold, let me do this. I know how to do it better. And he said that was a mistake. And then for the other kids forward, he did everything. And it's really bonded him, you know, with his kids. So, all right, guys, have a good day. Thank you very much.
Mr. Tom Arnold, I want to thank you. Yeah, once again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day, coming on the show. I'm going to drop you one piece of knowledge and a possible seed request. We've been telling all of our guests here for the past couple months, I'm planning on doing a Father's Day episode of Dadcast, something short and sweet with every guest we've had on in the past couple months. We're talking like 18 squares on the computer screen. A special Father's Day episode where we can wish each other happy Father's Day, and a happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. If that is something you'd be interested in, we'd love to have you on. It'll be short and sweet sometime early June.
We'll work that out. We'll do that.
Awesome, man. We'll not, no big deal. You know, it's just a great idea, I thought, and you know, to help promote dad.
Also, it had to be in the middle of Father's Day.
No. I'm just going to plan on dropping it on Father's Day. This is going to be recorded well beforehand. Yeah, let's ruin everyone's Father's Day for little old me.
Yeah. absolutely. And watch my podcast or listen to my podcast. Oh, yeah,
that is right. Talk about your podcast real quick.
It's very quickly. It's called Off Topic with Tom Arnold and Sasha Boggs, my assistant, who lives here with the kids and I. She's a comedian. She's an actress. She's also very good with kids. And we, you know, it's a lot of the minutia, what goes on here, but also the fact is she's 30 and I'm 60. And our point of view of anything, music, whatever, yeah, she knows nothing. Let me put it that way.
Right. But you know nothing either, right?
Yeah, I know nothing either. But it's fun to, you know, we have a good time. It's something to do. We've done it during the whole pandemic. And then, you know, the Queen of Meth premieres on Discovery Plus on the 7th of May, and I watched three-hour episodes, and I watched it, and they did a very good job. And there's a lot about, you know, parenting in there, as you can be bad parenting, but parenting and sobriety, and there's a lot of crime too, because the guy, the main DEA agent that busted my sister, breaks it down, and so there's a lot of stuff, you know. So check that out. Thank you, guys. I'll talk to you in June.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. On behalf of Dadcast, Nick Martin, thank you so much. I am JP Tom Arnold. Thank you once again. And we will see all of you next week. See you.